Hi, everyone. Welcome to the TimingResearch.com Crowd Forecast News, episode number 206 for December 3rd, 2018. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can also listen to the audio-only version of every episode of both shows now on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Just search for Timing Research and subscribe. If you have not had a chance to look at today's report and you would like to get a copy, just go to TimingResearch.com/reports, and you can get access to either the web version or the PDF version there. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of TimingResearch.com, and I have Rob Hanna back to moderate today. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Thanks, David. Good to be back. We had a small crowd so far today. It's just me and Sean Kozak of NeuroStreet.com. We may have Neil Batho of TraderReview.net joining us in a little while, but for now, it's just me and Sean, so you get all the insights from us. Sean, why don't we just start with you, and I'll let you introduce yourself, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your trading, and NeuroStreet.com, if you could.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me in again, and it's always a great opportunity to come in and speak with other traders and share insights. I'm the president of NeuroStreet, and essentially we're a globally recognized trading school. We run several trading rooms, not just one. We teach several systems. Most importantly, my background came from, I was an old OTA graduate. I learned under Sam Seiden, supply and demand trader from the Online Trading Academy. I started in about 2008, right around the market crash. And essentially within a few years after, you know, taking some of their programs, I ended up designing my own software algorithms to be able to trade the market without having to do it manually. So that's kind of the birth of how my trading career got started. I started working with a lot of programmers, a lot of coders, a lot of technical stuff with regards to the markets and how the markets actually operate internally.
And so what programs?
Yeah, so basically I've designed supply and demand volume algorithms. I've designed market profile algorithms. We've got divergence algorithms. We've got
I don't mean to keep cutting you off. I was just wondering what you used, you know, do you program GradeStation or R or
Python? So most of our software is designed for NinjaTrader. We've recently made it compatible for TradeStation. And so, you know, we're in the process of making the trading suite, if you will, because the software that we use and design and teach off of is specifically based around our trading systems that we teach in our trading school. Right. So over the years, I've got a few educators with, you know, a lot of experience that work with me. So I'm not the only instructor. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we've collectively combined all of our resources to be able to, you know, basically trade off full turnkey systems in a discretionary and semi-automated fashion. It just really depends on the persona. Myself, I'm more of a short-term trader. I like to be in and out of the market, but, you know, it depends if traders like to be intraday swing or if they want to scalp, we offer both.
Okay. But a lot of it sounds like is intraday.
Yeah, so because we're primarily on futures, mainly in the futures markets, normally most traders aren't holding overnight. But we do have plans to be able to open up our education arms to Forex and equities. It's just a gradual process. You know, we've got a large following. We've got a lot of students. The reason I say we're a trading school is because we run a university style education format, right? So the strategies that we trade and the trading systems that we teach off of and we trade with, there's a lot to learn. And becoming a professional trader is not just buying an indicator and hoping that you're going to actually supplement an income.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't take long to learn that.
Yeah.
Futures traders, is it primarily index futures, or do you get into
great question? So
oil and commodities and things like that. So
great question. For the scalping program, we focus on four primary markets. We trade gold, oil, the euro, and the YM. And then for market profile, we trade everything. So literally the entire suite of futures, all the way from lean hogs to cocoa to coffee to, because we're trading market profile. So it just depends on when the strategy's criteria is met. And our moderator, Raul Rivera, He's nothing short of miraculous. He's trading everything under the sun as long as it hits the areas and we're able to take the trade.
All right, interesting. Well, thanks for joining us today, Sean.
Not a problem.
Look forward to hearing a lot of your insights. I think we have Neil joining us.
I'm here.
Hi, Neil. This is Neil Batho of TraderReview.net. We're just doing introductions here, Neil, so you didn't miss a whole lot. Well, you missed Sean's introduction, so you're not getting that back. But other than that.
I was here for the lean hogs part, and I never traded lean hogs before. But what was it that they traded in the movie with Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah. I think it was
pork bellies.
And orange juice.
So
yeah. Too funny, guys. Too funny.
I look forward to signing up for Sean's newsletter so I can learn more about pork bellies. But no, that's great. Futures are fantastic. More and more people trade futures all the time. Many times I see the market a couple hours later, futures are up, you can get it. And then the next day, the Dow's up 400 and you missed it, but you didn't have to miss it, right? So what I do is I used to be a broker at a big firm almost 20 years ago now. Well, 98, 99, and learned really quickly that it wasn't about picking stocks. It was about gathering assets, and I didn't want to be an asset gatherer. And so hold people's hand when the market goes down and tell them everything's going to be okay when you could have gotten out and shorted the market instead. That's what I do now is I send out stock and option picks. We do ETFs, and we do a lot of commodities with the ETFs too. We'll do oil, gold, the US dollar index I love to trade as well. And I send out a model portfolio every day. Not new trades every day, but sort of what I think is the best at the moment.
Yep, makes sense. You can't have new trades every day, right? If you're trading in a it's a swing time frame, I think, right, Neil? Is that right?
I mean, so many times, the hardest part of what I do is when there's, maybe like a 1-3 week window where I just say, there's nothing to trade today, nothing to trade. And then, people say, why am I paying you if there's nothing to trade? And then I say, just wait. And then wait a couple of weeks and we'll get a gain of 100% on an option trade. And it's definitely worth it to wait when the time is right. And you can even look at something like the Pareto principle, 80-20 rule. 20% of the time you're not trading and 80% of the time you are trading, and 20% of your gains, 80% of your gains will come from 20% of your trades. So it's not a linear approach that a lot of people think. And I have people, they tell me, what's your average gain percent per month? And I say, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that,
Right. Yeah, I think you're dead on with, the knowing when your stuff is not in a favorable environment. You just need to sit out, right? A lot of traders don't understand that when they first start trading. And you can have different strategies for different market environments, but you need to understand what environments your strategies work best in. And if there's nothing setting up for you, you need to have the patience to sit out. Because I've seen plenty of traders that have overtraded and gotten in trouble. And there's plenty of people out there that have trading services that feel the pressure to overtrade because subscribers will say stuff like, I want more trade ideas from you. I want more picks. I want more this and that. And it's like, well, you want more, or you want quality, because what we're doing here is we're trying to, go after the things with the best reward risk ratios. And that's something that I've dealt with myself over time. Hearing it from another service provider is always a good thing when you're willing to be patient.
Yeah. I mean, even on this downturn, there were a few small picks we made off the bottom, and we did, shorted some bonds on the way down. But then even if you just waited and you got out near the top, you could have just waited this whole time for 2 months. And about the middle of last week, it was getting really, really, really obvious to buy. You could have basically sat it out for 2 months. And sometimes I just want to say on a Monday, guys, just hit the beach for the week. But I can't do that, right? Because I know that it's just going to be a bad week. And there's, unless you're day trading, where I can give a specific example, say, okay, we're going to, if these exact scenarios set up, maybe you can hold a trade for a couple hours, but right. I'm not doing this for a day trading service more. We're holding at least a couple of days to a few weeks or months.
All right, good. Well, I look forward to hearing more of your insights, Neil. I'll give a little bit of background on myself for those that don't know me. I'm Rob Hanna. I've been trading since the late 90s. In 2008, I started a site called Quantifiable Edges. Still run Quantifiable Edges and write a nightly letter there. I also started a site called Overnight Edges a few years later, which merged with Scott Andrews' Master the Gap site and became InvestiQuant. So at InvestiQuant, I do we have the Overnight Edges service, and I also do some swing trading services there as well, including our Swing Navigator newsletter. So my focus is primarily swing trading, and then, as I mentioned, also some overnight trading. And I don't do commodities. I do stocks, ETFs, and indices is my primary focus, or my total focus, I guess I would say. So let's get into the market this week. Question one, which we always got to start off with, is which direction do you think the S&P will move from this coming Monday's open through Friday's close? Now we've had a big gap open this morning, and we got no trading on Wednesday this week. So it's a short week, I'm not sure if that will take will matter much to you guys. It'll be nice to have a day off on Wednesday, I guess. Really just looking for bullish or bearish or neutral, I guess. But let's try and avoid completely neutral. So I'll go first. I'm just, and we can get into reasons afterwards, but I just want to see where everyone stands here. If I had to pick a direction, I would pick bullish. I would say we're moving up over the next few days, but I don't have real high confidence in it. My confidence is quite low. I'm leaning more neutral than anything. Neil, what about you? Are you leaning bullish, bearish?
Well, why is the market closed on Wednesday?
President Bush's funeral and National Day of Mourning. Okay, so we got U.S. stock, and I think the bond market's closing now too.
I'm going to say up, and I'm just going to do. Are we sharing our charts now? I'll just say.
Yeah, I'll come back to you. So we got. I'm up slightly. You sound up, and yeah, Sean.
I'm gonna say up slightly. Yeah.
I'm actually neutral bearish.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm actually neutral bearish, to be honest with you. Yeah, I think we're going to go back down before we go back up.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about some reasons that we can go in these directions. Neil, you wanted to share charts. So why don't I start with you? You can tell us what you're thinking and seeing as far as possibilities for heading higher.
Okay. I'm just bringing up the S&P 500 chart here. Yeah, it's a tough one because obviously we started getting long in the middle of last week, so we're already long. But if I look here, this is what I have here, four different time frames on Ichimoku Cloud. So if I'm looking back here, you know, this was 28th of November, and we were getting in back here as we're moving through. So now we're in a situation where, first of all, if you're not long, I wouldn't get long. But if you are already long, then you can stay long. And mainly the main focus of what I do is it's all about the entry point for years and years and years. If you get the right entry point, you're not going to worry about anything. You're not going to worry about little drawdowns when you're already up. But yeah, I mean, if you look back here, we have to get past this triple top. But then even if you do, if you go just a little bit higher around 2900, that's where we broke down before. So we're going to be kind of in, you know, limbo for the next couple of days. But what I'm sort of expecting is I'm expecting a little bit of inching up because people will get excited and worried that they're missing out. But then right around 2900 is where my target would be to get out. So if you're not in, I wouldn't get in. But if you're in, you can wait a little while.
Okay. So you think we may get a little bit of a pause or a pullback here before we head up to that 2900 level? I don't hear you, Neil.
If you're in, you can be putting in some pretty tight stops. But if you're not in, I would not get in right now because you should have been in last week because you weren't reading Trader Review. So sorry.
Okay.
But I just got to say it. Yeah. So it's all about the entry points. You know, that reminds me, if you're ever doing a trade and you're looking at it and you think, should I be getting in? And you look at the trade and you go, wow, it would have been great to get back in here. Then you know what? You weren't watching that trade enough. And if you want to do well in the markets, you have to watch at least the index, gold, the dollar, and a few other things every single day. Because everything will follow, about 80% of stocks will follow the index. Not all, of course. Some fantastic fundamental stocks will do the opposite of the index. If things are crashing, it'll be soaring. But overall, you need to be looking at these things every day. So when you get the right entry point and you don't have any fear to get in, you can do it because you'll have a tight stop and a great objective. So if you're not in, don't get in. But I think we'll inch up a little bit.
Okay. All right. Sean, what is it you're looking at right now that's telling you we might be heading down a little bit?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you recall from the last time I was on the show, I said if we don't break 2800, we're going right back down to test the value area low. It did the exact same thing that I said it did in the last review. It went up. It tested 2800 on the ES. I'm going to share my screen and show you exactly what I'm looking at.
Okay.
And and that way you can understand where I'm at. Let me know if you can see this, guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So last time we were in the class or the show you guys hosted on me, we were on this bullish move up. We just came down. We're in a big bearish move. And I said, if we come up to test 2,800 at the monthly value area high, and I know everybody said that everybody was bullish. And I said, I don't think we're going to be bullish until we can clear that level. And unfortunately, the market just couldn't do it. Didn't have enough buying strength. So it came back down. And basically what I had suggested, if they can't clear 2,800, they're going to come back down to test the value area low from the previous month, which was around this area at 2,640. And I personally don't believe that if we are going to be bullish, we must clear this value area high from the last 2 months. We just broke last month's value area high on this gap up, but I think they're going to suck a lot of traders in and they're going to squeeze. They're going to basically slam it back down and close the gap. And then before they close that gap, it'll be a do or die point at the point of control at 2730. So for me personally, I'm not saying that we're not bullish, but I just think that before we are going to go straight up and break this area of resistance, we're going to come back down to at least test high volume, which is down here at 2740 area. And then that way, if any trend continuation is going to take place on the S&P, it's going to happen and they're going to start accumulating from that place on.
Okay, interesting. So, I mean, you're looking at it from a bearish standpoint over the next few days saying, oh, we're likely to pull back a little bit, but then it's a matter of
it's a matter of letting the market prove itself. And yeah. if the market can't prove itself at the high volume, they're going to come back down and test the value area low, which is at 2674 from last month. And this is a very macro standpoint, right? Like intraday profiles. If we look at our market profile intraday chart, we have a downtrend intraday on the 30-minute timeframes. For day trading, I mean, this is a bearish trend trade to the short side. They're going to try and close the gap. I would suspect bullish buyers to step in this area here intraday if we can close the gap. If not, they'll probably try and test that in the overnight session, the Globex tonight, if they can get back down that area. But another thing that also tells me that we're bearish is that we're gapping up into a major level of supply on the daily. So at the end of the day, like we look at supply and demand volume profile algos, and if we're looking at the monthly value area high right at the same place we have daily supply, that's a very, very big bearish gap up, right? Like we gapped up into sellers, and this is the type of stuff that we teach our traders. It's like just because you see a bunch of crowd mentality jump in fearing, and I'll agree with Neil here, right? Like if you're in, you know, tight stops, because like most likely, unless they break up with huge momentum, you're going to be retracing. So
can you what are those red and green areas on the chart? Did you do that by yourself or did the software do that?
No, that's our software. I designed software algorithms about 4 years ago that depict supply and demand volume profile levels. And we look at volume profile breakout distributions inside the print and then also using volume weighted TPO analysis. So like we're really big on supply and demand order flow and market profile, right? And volume profiles. So we use a lot of technical analysis for our studies. It's not fundamental or opinion based. We're very, very technical based traders.
And is that money flow as well or something else?
No, there's no money flow in here. These are all proprietary indicators coded by our internal team.
Is that NinjaTrader 7 or 8?
NinjaTrader 8. Everything's on Ninja 8, yeah. And TradeStation 10.0. We got half our product line on TradeStation 10.0. But you know, it's like my thoughts are is who do you listen to, right? Like we have so many opinions and we have so many different ways to look at things. I'll give you a breakdown, like, you know, just kind of give you like, this is our market profile performance for the past 3 years. Our educator trades this. This is broker verified statements. So we've done over 1 million P&L this year on the account alone. And all the broker statements are down here to prove that if you just click on all the links down here. So like this type of stuff works if you learn how to do it. What really, really happens is a lot of traders get stuck into the idea of making money rather than learning how to actually learn the skill set of making money. And I think it's really valuable. I think it's really valuable that if you can have an opinion, that's great. But the opinion should be based off of something that is backed with some type of merit, right? And I know, Rob, you mentioned many times you've got your analytical studies and you've got your algos that you run. And it's based off of years of research, right? It's based off of years of study and years of of facts and information. It's not just based off of, I think the market's going to do this, I think the market's going to do that. It's right. You got to have some type of evidence that can support the claim.
Yeah. And you know, whatever tools work best for you and that you can understand and relate to, that, you know, that's great. It's got to be in your time frame, but the tool's got to have an edge too, right?
100%. I mean, so 100%.
You can't just be like, if there's a doji here, that means we're going the other direction.
What's interesting too is when I said the market could come back down to the value area point of control, what's nice to know is that's also lining up with a big demand zone on the daily time frame. So I really do think that we'll sell off, close the gap to 2740 into demand. And that's a big, big key area. That's a key area.
I got
area.
A good rule that just I was just reminded of is that it's not exactly a new positive trend here. It was definitely an area that we're moving up from the very bottom, but ignore the first sell signal in a new positive trend. I heard that a long time ago, and it is so true. I
mean, all right,
negative trend. The new one comes in. Market makers are going to hunt that little miniature stop like crazy. People get stopped out, and then it's going to rally almost every single time.
So let me quantify that for you.
Okay.
I'm hosting the show. I got to figure out how to screen share here.
Green arrow on the left.
There we go. All right. So, Neil, you mentioned, you know, the first sell signal in a new trend is
a fake.
Is often a fake out. This is from our 1130 subscriber letter, but let me see if I can go back to the 1129, because that one. All right. This is going to show you exactly what this is going to show people on a quantified basis, exactly what Neil was talking about here. We looked at this last week and we had a three day move higher and we were below the 200 day moving average for the S&P. And so this little study here says, all right, if S&P moves up 3 days in a row and below the 200 day moving average, and it did not close at a 50 day low just prior to the rally, what happens if you buy it on the close and sell, you know, over the next few days? Anyway, as you can see, reliable pullback, right? They're pretty reliable. 75% of the time it's going down over the next 2 days, 70% of the time over the next 3 days. These are pretty big numbers. This is on 100,000 a trade. So you're looking at like down 1.2% on average, where the average the average down move was about 2.3%. You can see. All right. Now, what if we flip this and say it's coming off of a 50 day low, closing low? This is where we were at last week. So it's the same setup. Up 3 days in a row, below the 200, but now you're coming off of a 50-day low. And what happens is people that are short are now getting squeezed, right? And it makes it, it gives that much more buying. They can get squeezed for a number of days. And so you get a strong move off of a low area that can really, accelerate. And we see that here, it's a fairly low number of instances, but 80% of the time over the next 5 days, you're higher by an average of 2%. You know, even over the next 2 days, you're up 1% on average. And we saw it play out last week. This is Wednesday night. I ran these studies. And like, here's a little profit curve that shows how it's done over time for the 5-day exit strategy. But this is exactly what Neil's talking about. And it's something that traders need to be aware of. When, overbought in a downtrend is normally pretty shortable. But if you're overbought in a long-term downtrend coming off of it, like a long-term low or an intermediate-term low, watch out. So that's what we were looking at last week, leading up to the last few days here. And that kept me from wanting to get short where I normally would when we're reaching levels like, 3 days up in a downtrend or 10 day highs in a downtrend or things like that. So that's some of the stuff that led me to think, hey, we're probably moving higher. Now, I don't have anything saying what we're doing from here, really. And even over the weekend, there wasn't a whole lot of short-term stuff that was triggering. One thing that I looked at over the weekend, which more longer-term for me is interesting, is we're really getting close now to the S&P's 50-day moving average moving under its 200-day moving average. And that's not – some people call it a death cross, and it's not as deadly as it sounds.
It could be just for a couple of days.
It could be, the way the thing's moving up.
24-year-old MBAs who work on Wall Street will have to write about something.
And this is all the death crosses since 1929 for the S&P. And what's interesting is about 70% or 72% of the time, buying them is better than shorting them, right? So you're better off getting long at this point, because a lot of times whatever the pullback is over. Of course, you may get hit with a massive bear. So if we started a portfolio in 1929, that first trade would have lost 65%. And even though you're only making money on, or even though 72% of them would have made money, you're still really hurting after 90 years. Okay. So the win rate tells me, one, it's not a great timing device, but this is also a lesson in managing risk and drawdown as well. So know the environment you're in, and you know, you need to adjust your strategies and be trading more bear market strategies if you get into an extended period down like this. And that's it. So anyway, those are some of the things that I've been looking at. Like I said, don't have a lot of strong evidence for the next few days. The InvestiQuant numbers were looking up over the next few days, but when you're already at a short term, and I say 10 day or higher high, or 10 day or longer high, then though, even if you've got bullish numbers, and ours are borderline bullish. So if you got borderline bullish numbers, it's basically a neutral setup. What you really want to see is good numbers from us, and you know, you're below the 10-day moving average or something like that, then you've got a real good chance at a bounce higher. Or you get negative numbers and you're overbought, right? But we're not seeing negative numbers now, so that's saying, all right, well, we got a decent chance to continue higher. And if you know, it's not ripe for shorting, right? But risk reward isn't great right here, and I think we're all seeing that one way or another, it sounds like. Let me go back to you guys and ask you, is there anything you're looking at this upcoming week that would get you to, you know, change your perspective greatly? So I know neither of you are like real fundamental traders. What levels are you looking at that are important, I guess, in the next few days that might get you to move off of a bullish stance or a bearish stance, or make you confirm your stance or whatever it is? Neil, can I start with you?
Yeah, just putting up the chart here. Is the chart up here?
Yeah.
You can see the chart here now?
Yep.
Okay, so this, I use the Ichimoku cloud a lot in my trading. I like it because instead of just trying to do these trend lines on certain angles, the trend line will change according to the volatility in the chart. So what you can see here is back on November 26th, you know, you had a gap up and you could have got in here on the S&P, and it holds it the entire time. So even through the sideways and through the upward motions, and here we are here, 2800, you know, just like Sean said, it was an important level. But what you could do here is, if you are long, you can just hold this 5-minute cloud. It's a really short time frame. And you could have a stop here around 2765. And even on this software, it's tradingview.com. You can even set a cell phone alert if it breaks the Ichimoku cloud. So it might wake you up in the middle of the night or something, but, well, you're only trading market hours. But if it gets below the 5-minute cloud here, and that would sort of be what the tight stop would be.
Okay. That's interesting. All. So that cloud right now, is you're looking at what levels are you... would be the tight stop at this point?
Just if it breaks the cloud by a little more than a hair, you know, if it down to,
so
around
2770 ish area, or 65-ish. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And that cloud's going to obviously change over the next few hours and whatever. So that could move up or down, correct?
Yeah, it changes. And if you're long too, what you could even do is you could just get out right now and just wait for a bit more of a breakout to get back in. You're going to miss a lot, but it'll be pretty good for your risk to reward. Mm-hmm. But because you'd already be up the last couple of days. I mean, we got into SPXL, triple leverage S&P 500, and SOXL, the triple leverage semiconductor, which is just up huge today. So, yep. You know, we used to have this joke around the office, and I remember all these funny stories. Is a guy would call in and he'd say, hey, he wants me to sell this stock. I don't know what to do. And the other broker would say, no one ever got hurt taking a profit. You know, but then we'd have people that they're up 30% on an internet stock and they sell it and they think they're a hero. And then it goes up 500% and they're call them on the phone. And yeah, you didn't want to be anywhere near that conversation. So if you want to lose a client, sell too early. That's the absolute certainty in the industry. Sell too early, you will never hear the end of it. That account is gone. No doubt about it. No doubt. So that's another reason why brokers will never sell, all the way down to you living on the street, is because if you sell too early, it's worse than losing, you know, from a psychological standpoint. Yeah.
I'd never heard that before. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was there during the internet boom, and I remember we had this one fairly rookie broker, and what was he buying? One of the stocks was MSGI. Oh, they're the internet leader. Oh, you got to buy eggs, egghead.com.
Yep.
EGG. Is that still your
you remember eggs?
I remember eggs. Yes. Yes, I do.
You buy tech stuff online, get it shipped to you.
I don't still hold it.
CMGI. And so these things are going crazy. And, you know, then we had some guys around the office. They've been there 20, 30 years. And they'd be like, we're raising cash. I'm raising cash. I'm scared. And then I remember a bit before I left in 99, there was one guy and he said, I'm putting everyone into oil. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And man, did he ever do well for his clients buying oil in 99 and before the crash and
yeah. Everything.
If you sell too early, you're going to hate yourself. And you're going to hate your broker. And so just have those good stops, and if you sell too early and it rallies again, get back in, because if you don't, you're gonna hate yourself. So yep. That was really what I noticed in the office trading, is don't sell too early. But when the market goes down, misery loves company, and brokers just hold everyone's hand and say, don't worry about it. So, you know, if you got out too early, you just get back in, and that's the way it goes.
All right.
I got a lot of broker stories. Only 1 year, but I got a lot of them.
Really? You only did it for 1 year?
Yeah.
I've heard you tell a few of them, and they are good. All right, Sean, what about you? What might change your mind if it occurred in the upcoming, or what are you looking out for, I guess? I mean, you already told us a little bit that 2800 level is important. Is there anything else?
Well, what's interesting, I'll show you something on my charts that only a supply and demand trader would really know about, but I'm just going to just zoom in here a little bit and explain the thing about supply and demand. Is that I'm just going to zoom into this level because this is where technical analysis becomes really, really important. And if you take a look at this, is an area of supply that was chewed up before. Actually, it came in right here on this high wick, and then it came in again right here. But if you notice that every other time it went higher, right? So from the time it went into that supply, it came into that low volume pocket, then it came back up and it got stopped in this low volume pocket. And if there's a feature in here that allows us to turn tested shading on. So if I look at this zone, fresh supply is at 2820. So they might come up and test the supply at 2820. And at 2820, if they do not sell it off from that level, we will break the supply level. That's the only place in which unfilled order flow has been taken in, and it's at that low volume pocket at the top. And what's really the reason for me still sticking to my bearish stance, and I don't mean to be the devil's advocate here, but the reality is that we gapped up and we did not get a chance to break the previous high into fresh supply. So unless it has the power to jump up there and chew through that order flow, I still think we're bearish, and I'm standing on that doll.
Yeah, the gap up would have been a lot more powerful if it happened from a low area, right? And once you're being short-term overbought already going into Friday afternoon, the gap up doesn't have as much power.
I still can't express the power of a monthly profile level. Like we're talking, you know, a value area high on a month. We're not talking an hourly value area high or even a three-day value high. We're talking the entire month of October, and then November is sitting around the same area, right? So to me, you know, we're in expensive territory, and until we get some major catalyst, I don't think any type of catalyst will happen unless it's fundamental. I don't think unless we have some fundamental catalyst that's going to really drive the market bullish above these levels, I still think we're going to stay within the value area.
What if Trump and Powell go golfing together?
Yeah.
I would be buying the futures right away.
Yeah. Well, I'm down in Mexico, so I don't know. I'm actually traveling right now, and what's interesting, you know, Maybe Mexico and the U.S. will strike a deal.
Never know.
All right, let's move on to question four here, which is what procedures, this is kind of the question of the week, what procedures do you use to monitor and evaluate your trading results and progress over time? Sean, you want to start with that one? And I've been having Neil start the last few.
Sure. Are you talking what, mainly statistics? Are you talking type of trade statistics? Or are you?
Well, it says what procedures do you monitor with? So my line of thinking was, you know, how are you measuring the six, you know, do you look at things, how your individual systems are doing? Do you look at do you just look at performance? Do you look at anything? Yes. Or what software do you use to look at it? Is it Excel spreadsheet?
That's great. We have an affiliate, you know, and this is completely unplanned or unscheduled, but we have an alliance with Trade Journaling Spreadsheets. They're a company company that specializes in journaling software for equities, futures, forex, and stocks. They're actually quite good. I can show you an example of what they look like so that you can actually go in and actually see. I'm just going to share my screen here if you guys can see it. And actually, give me one second. I'm going to pull up another an example of this. And really what we do is because we can, they're the only software spreadsheet, because most of our software is designed for Ninja Trader. And ultimately, I'll give you an example of this is what a journaling software looks like. This is just a screenshot of it. I could load the actual raw file if you choose, but it really allows us to break down market specific criteria, day of week criteria, long to short analysis, win to loss ratio. I mean, we've customized the analytics tools for our traders in the school. So for me personally, what I do is I take a combination of the reports that we pull out of the platform and we import them into the actual journaling spreadsheets. Because if you pull performance reports from whatever platform you're using, whether it be TradeStation, Ninja, Sierra Charts, you're using, you know, any of these other platforms, I mean, you're always going to get the same win loss ratio, profit factor, and all that, but that really doesn't really tell you anything with regards to your trading, right? I mean, it tells you statistics over the end all results, but I mean, we have the ability to go in and actually statistically look at, well, you know, on average, if you look at this month, every losing day was Tuesday, right? Well, why is that, right? Like, why are we losing on Tuesdays, but we're making money on every other month or every other day, right? And if you take a look at the wins to losses, you know, completely profitable the short side and completely, you know, this is an example of looking at longs. Well, this example, the trader wasn't making money to the long side. He's only making money to the short side. These types of statistics are more important to an active day trader than opposed to just say someone that's building portfolio analysis or maybe, you know, somebody that's looking over more of a quant specific area. But for day trading, it's we find it more critical for that, right? Because we are a day trading school, right? So it really just depends on the analysis of the trader. And I think personally, you know, paying attention to the persona of the trader. I think if a trader is someone that has a very hard temperament of being able to stay in the market, holding for large reward to risk ratios may not be the strongest strategy for them, right? Being in and out. I know traders that are hitting win rates at 80% and they risk a dollar to make 50 cents all day and they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? So it just really depends on the trader's persona. And I think like you nailed it on the head earlier. You're talking about going for large reward to risk ratios, which is important, especially for the right trader, right? However, for the trader that can't stand sitting in the market, I would disagree with that. I would say that they're completely the opposite. And it's really about understanding your system and understanding yourself.
Well, reward the risk, from my standpoint, I wasn't necessarily saying, well, you need to have the ability to make twice as much on this trade as you would lose. From when I look at things, I think, all right, this has got this kind of win rate, right?
Yes.
So yeah, that's really important. If I can make money on 75% of these trades or 60% of these trades or 30% of these trades, you can make money on any of these percentages, then how much do I need to be risking versus reward? So yes, in some cases, yeah, you're right. Lower potential reward is fine if you got a high win rate. And it's the opposite if you got a low one, right?
I mean, if you're trading small cap biotech stocks, maybe you got a 40% chance you're going to win. So, but if you win, you're going to make three times what you put in. So you're going to have more losers than winners, but you're going to make money. And, or you could have a situation where, you know, you're only going to, like, you're going to make $1,000 if you win, you're going to lose $1,000 if you lose, but you think there's an 80% chance you're going to win. Well, I'll play that all day long. You know, I remember getting an email from a client once and he said, I don't like this trade because I only do trades with a 3-to-1 reward ratio. And I wrote him back and I said, yeah, but I think there's an 80% chance we're going to trade. And we did. And so it really depends. And so a lot of people will double down if they lose, and that's a losing strategy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know what's hilarious about doubling down is, you want to know why there's max bets at the tables in Vegas? What'll say max bet 1,000, max bet 10,000? Is because if you double down to infinity, you will break the house. If you have direct access to the Federal Reserve to loan you as much money as possible forever, you will break the casino and you will buy the casino. And so that's why, because you just double down. I had a friend once in Vegas. He goes, no, man, you just go to the $2 machines. And when you lose, you double down. And I go up to $32 sometimes and I keep winning. And yeah, I don't know where I'm going on that tangent, but
Was that Martingale betting scheme? Is that what they call that? I'm trying to remember. But yeah, it works great until it doesn't. Then you're wiped out.
Yeah, you know, it's what I do for my trading, though, is a long time ago, I got emails from clients saying, I just don't know how much to put in the trade. And I didn't sell when you said, and now I'm down. And I think, okay, so I figured this out. So what I did is I developed a calculator, got someone to buy it or to program it for me. And it's called the percent risk method. And you could write that down and look it up. And what it is that the closer your stop, the more you put in the trade. And so my calculator will say, how much is in your account? You put it in, what's the stock at now? And where's the stop? And sometimes the stop will be very close. I mean, if you're trading futures, the stop's going to be really, really close, 0.25%. And it looks perfect on the chart. And when that stop is 0.25%, you could do a 10 times leverage futures trade with no news announcements. Your stop is 0.5% away and you could do awesome. Your account's up 7-8% before the market even opens the next day. But if you're stopped out, your account's only going to lose 1%. And I can set it on the calculator. I want my account entirely to drop 0.25%, 0.5%, 1%, or 2%. And so depending upon what your risk method is, if you're someone that says, I don't like the stock market, it's too risky, you could set it at what if your entire account only lost 0.25% if you got stopped out, and then you just do little bits here and there. So that's what I like to do for the volatility in the account. And if you're doing, you know, you're trading something with a tight stop, you put it at about, well, I usually stick around 1%, but a tight stop, we had, I think, 20 something percent of our entire trade, our entire portfolio in SOXL, the triple leverage semiconductor ETF, 20 something percent, the calculator told us to do. And if we were stopped out, our account is only down 1%. That a trade is now up about 17% in a week. So when you time it perfect, you put more in the trade.
Right.
That's my long-winded answer to the question.
All right. And is there, that kind of tool sounds exactly what people would need to measure their risk going into a trade. Are there things that you use to evaluate results? Other things over time, other than brokerage statements and
not really. I don't really back test what I've done and think about much.
Yeah, I mean, for me these days, it's mostly just looking at my own monthly and annual performance. You know, if I make a lot of money in a year, it's a good year, right? If I don't make a lot of money in a year, it's not a good year. But I do break it down into, you know, what strategies are doing well for me and what ones aren't. And that's something I did years ago when I first started day and swing trading. I would trade. I used one of the books I remember that I took some strategies from back in the late 90s was Jeff Cooper's old hit and run trading book. And he had a couple of them, hit and run two, whatever it was. And he had some setups in there. And I got some software that would scan for those setups. And then I would look to trade those setups in certain stocks. And so I always, I might take 4 or 5 trades a day. And then I would track which setups were doing the best for me. And as a beginning trader, I'll tell you the biggest value in that was that there were days where there weren't any setups that were triggering in the morning, right? And I'd still have some things on that I'd be looking at, and I'd say, oh, that looks like it's going up, or that looks like it's going down. And so I'd take a trade in whatever it was that I was thinking, and I can't remember what I called it. It was like random or, something like that, I would say, or hunch. I think it was my hunch system, right? If it didn't exactly set up for one of my setups, I'd call it hunch, and I'd still mark it down. I'd still track it. Well, it didn't take me long to figure out the hunch trade sucked.
I thought it was an acronym that snap was something cool.
What's that?
I thought hunch was an acronym that would be.
No. Nope.
High volume. Valued. What would the N be?
It was just me looking at it thinking, oh, well, that setup's close to this. And I, it looks like it's moving so I called it hunch because it didn't exactly quite meet any of the criteria for whatever it was I was looking to trade. And hunches were no good. And I didn't trade them for long. So that's...
It sounds like a bad lunch. You had a hunch with some bad lunch.
That's right. You got to heave the lunch afterwards.
If you're trading, have a little sticky note on your computer and put it up on the screen and say, if you're about to make a trade, are you gambling right now? ?
Yep.
You think, oh, wait a sec, I am gambling. Okay, I'm not going to do the trade.
Well, fortunately, I was trading with small money, so it wasn't an expensive lesson, but it is a lesson that I think everyone needs to learn early on, that whatever your methods are, you got to stick to them. All right, let's look to wrap it up here, I guess. But I want to let you guys, if you have a trade idea for the week, that'd be great. Or if you have anything going on at your sites that you want to tell us about, please do so and let people know how to get in touch with you as well. Neil, you want to start off, tell us anything you want about Trader Review, give us a possible pick.
Well, a few months ago we made money shorting bonds, but you know what, now that Powell has eased off, you don't have to sell your bonds anymore. So if anyone was thinking about selling their long-term bonds in their retirement account, wait for at least a gain of a couple more percent, I think so. As far as getting into something right now, no, I don't have that, because the time was really last week. But here's the TLT anyway. This is something everybody saw, the fundamentals in this trade coming for years, that interest rates go up, bonds go down. I'll just go to the weekly chart here. But you can make a lot of money off bonds if you trade them. So, I mean, right around here was when we just finally got in for this collapse. But then, you know what?
Hang on, Neil, we're not seeing your screen.
Oh, okay. Just a second. Here's the long bond. And right around here is when we got in for some puts. And we made 70%, I think, in 2 days. But right about here, things could rally back up to about 120. That would be a great time to get out of some long-term bonds in your account. And by that time, you're getting almost 3% in a CD. And here's a scam I found out about. I'm betting there are millions of people in the United States that have a 401k or an IRA, and they're in a so-called balanced fund. And what that fund is 50% stocks, 50% bonds, and you are paying a 1.5% management fee on that account. Well, let me tell you something. You're also paying 1.5% on the bond section of that account that is only yielding you about 2.75%. And they are taking almost all of your money on half the account. So get out of that, put half the money in the S&P 500 with a managed fee of hardly anything on the ETF, and then buy, I think, another one called BND. And I looked it up. It charges 0.05% manager fee, which is almost nothing. So you can choose between 0.05% or 1.5%. So balanced fund. It's not a pick, but if you're in it, I could save you a couple of $1,000 a year by switching. So that's a big scam, is the balanced fund.
Yeah, wow. That's a good one to let people be aware of. All right. And I'm sorry, anything you wanted to let us know about Trader Review coming up? Or
yeah, I send out great commentary several times a week. I'm always trying to get even the free readers in and out of big macro calls. So, I mean, I was definitely pounding the table a few months ago to get out. And, you know, I've been talking about bonds for a while to get out. It looks like with the Powell switch, I get back into bonds at the moment. But we're not still back into a full-blown bull market anymore. So we're still trading these bounces from the bottom. But mainly what I always talk about is never, ever be in crisis mode. So, you know, if you stay on top of the markets every day, you're never going to be in crisis mode in your portfolio if you're trading for yourself. If you sign up, I send out a lot of good macro overall commentary.
Hey, Rob, you're muted.
All right, now you can probably hear me. I think I muted myself too late for the sneeze, and then now you can't. Then you couldn't hear me when I was talking to Sean there. Sean, let's go to you. Anything?
Sure. I can share this with you guys right now. Just if you go to our website, it's very simple. We're a day trading school, right? So, like, I'm a scalper. Our market profile traders are intraday swing traders. You know, we've got hundreds of traders in the rooms combined. You know, we've been around for a while doing, you know, we've got great validated performance, all that fun stuff. But if you really just want to learn how to day trade what we're doing, and if you're someone that's like, well, I want to look at trading performance, there's a performance tab on our website. We post everything on a monthly basis, very, very transparent. The thing here is that there's a guest pass. So when you click on the homepage of our website, it says free pass. I don't think anybody that goes to the site can miss it. It says right there, free. That you just click on this button, and it brings you to this inner page, and it asks you a very simple question. Are you more interested in learning market profile, or are you interested in learning supply and demand and order flow? And if you're not sure, we've got traders that have been with us for years that work for us now internally as account managers, and they trade our software and systems. So they'll get in touch with you, right? It's very simple. And I'll be running our trading rooms tomorrow morning. I was confused about what you said there about the Wednesday, the markets being closed. Is this something that just new happened or something? Because like any calendar that I've got, it doesn't say that the markets are closed. So,
yeah, President Bush passed away over the weekend, and they always close the market in honor of a president for a national day of mourning. So they're doing it on Wednesday.
So they'll be doing it on Wednesday. So they'll probably be announcing that through all the brokers. And okay, perfect. I just because I'll be running the room Tuesday and Thursday. Then Wednesday won't be having a class. Thanks for letting me know. I'm going to go down to the beach. No, I'm just kidding. But it's great. And if you're interested in any of the system software that we're using or the programs that follow each of those trade rooms, we have a supply and demand order flow program and a market profile program. We got a big team, and the bigger the team, the more people you can help. So if you're interested, come and trade with us. It's free. Doesn't cost you any money. Learn what we do first before spending any money.
All right. I hope some people check you out there, Sean. It was great getting to talk to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me in. And it's great to have new guys in here. I'm going to put a link in the chat box for anybody that's interested. And thanks for having me in.
Okay, great. And again, I'm Rob Hanna. I don't really have a trade idea right now, but I would say, if we do get a pullback heading into the second half of December, then one thing that often works is long the small caps, and you can hedge that with a short the large caps. Second half of December has been some good seasonality, especially for small cap stocks. And if you get a pullback going into it, that could make for a nice setup. So if we test those value areas that those guys were talking about, if we get back below the 10-day moving average, let's say, on the chart for S&P or for IWM, that might be buyable in the next couple of weeks. You can check me out at investquant.com or quantifiableedges.com. You're able to go onto either site and take free trials of our offerings there. So please do so if you're interested in learning more about the services I have. And thank you, David. And thanks, guys. It was great getting to talk to you.
I got a pick here real quick. It's Equity Residential Real Estate Trust, and it's at a yearly high and went through the whole market crash. It rallied almost through the whole thing. Probably a good time to buy on a pullback, but it's actually broken through a massive base over the last couple of years.
Wow. Okay.
And it yields 3% for all of you yielders out there. This isn't you never want to chase yield in a bear market because stock companies will drop their yield and then the stock crashes just like GE. But, you know, it's broken out here over the last several years. So you could get maybe a move up to around 80 or 90. But it's not a bad place to be REITs. It's not going to be a big money maker, but if someone wants to hang out for a while and try to get some yield in a retirement account, I think REITs are okay right now.
Awesome. Thanks, Neil.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. Just want to remind everyone watching to be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or shows. Also, be sure to join us tomorrow at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time for the next episode of Analyze Your Trade. Jim Kenny, Christian Fromhertz, and Michael Filigera will be on for that one. And just want to thank my guests again for this week. Sean Kozak of NeuroStreet.com, Neil Batho of TraderReview.net, and Rob Hanna of InvestiQuant.com and QuantifiableEdges.com. Thanks, everyone.